medicine-related subjects. So we had to, we were swept up in this and attached to the School of Modern Languages and Cultures within the College of Arts. This was great for some aspects of our provision, but not good for the support function, because each of these units, each of these colleges, effectively functions quite autonomously with its own budget, and the College of Arts is asking, why should we pay for support that goes to international students, very few of whom are actually going to wind up in the College of Arts, a minute percentage. Yes, it could have been worse, because as I say, it did have certain benefits. One of them was the release of money and an expectation that we would undertake research and scholarship, which has been great. It also had very positive effects on our development and provision of credit-bearing courses, because obviously that was a way of continuing to reach international students in other colleges, but we could receive income through that, through FTEs. So again, just looking at the analysis of our teaching activity last year, the pre-sectional and commercial is still huge. This is the teacher training. The in-sectional support, not surprisingly, has shrunk. And the credit-bearing provision has more than doubled. It's probably trebled in size. The embedded or adjunct stroke integrated support is still somewhat rudimentary, so not a lot of development there, partly because of the turmoil of the change, if you like. And the funding for this becomes so complicated. Yeah, getting money from one college to another across these barriers, it became almost impossible. So this is the sort of route that we went down, developing more credit-bearing provision. But this was a problem, because at the same time, the university was embarking on it and successfully achieving its target of doubling the numbers of international students. So not surprisingly, a crisis emerges. As with lots of crises of this type, particularly if you're part of a unit that doesn't have a very high profile, the crisis emerges in various bits. So some of the things that happened, and one of these served as a catalyst for change. Anybody want to guess which one? Just curious. And it's bizarre, isn't it? Because you would think, what is the issue? And what I understood there, and it was not the issue itself, it was where it was raised, and it was raised in the Senate. So it's, I guess, the learning there for us was, it doesn't matter how right you are or what your message is, if it's not raised in the right forum where senior managers can hear and have to respond to it. Because the minute it becomes a piece of work, in other words, it's on the to-do list, handed over from the Senate to court, senior managers have to act on it. So, curiously enough, I won't go into the ins and outs of how this happened, but this was the catalyst for change. Bizarre. But there it is. We, of course, knew that the crisis was there. In fact, it had been the relative lack of support for international students in all its dimensions was something well known to us. So we had a set of ready proposals for how to figure this provision better, and went to senior managers. But again, not the way the university works. They ask us to investigate and make a big long report. Yes. We can't just have the right ideas, you've got to present them in the right way. So these were the questions that they were asking us to investigate. Do these resonate? I don't know if in your institution they're always asking this kind of thing. Yeah. Why innovate when you can copy? It's like the idea. So yes, we undertook to do this in September. So to inform our thinking, we did look to the Australian model, because in our view that is probably the best developed model for this type of work, and we found the Jones et al. Sort of structure interesting. It's a sort of variation of what we saw this morning. At the time, and still, made the change, our main in-sectional support is generic in nature. It's standalone. We offer a series, I think we've got five different options of courses. They're all eight-week long courses, writing level one, writing level two, listening,
speaking level one, speaking level two, open to all comers, students from any discipline, any level, postgraduate or undergraduate. So very rudimentary, and really, in our view, the least desirable model, really, towards this extreme end. Adjunct week, it's a kind of bolt-on provision. All the usual problems associated with that type of provision. We have large, we're oversubscribed in the first week, and then the students shrink down. By the end, you've got a dozen, perhaps, of generally the worried well, in other words, very good students who don't really need the support. But it's not very flexible, it doesn't work well. So our wish was to move the institution towards this end. So perhaps bolt-on provision of this, maybe discipline-specific, something integrated, in other words, timetabled within students' courses, but perhaps developed by EAP people, and then ultimately true embedded provision, sort of as described earlier, where you've got subject lecturers who have the tools and the training to actually address the language issues, academic literacy issues themselves. So that's what we were hoping for. So we did our analysis. We used different methodologies. We expanded the group of universities. We thought, Russell Group don't have all the answers. Let's look to like accredited universities. So we did a web search, basically looking, analyzing the websites, the information available, sometimes followed up by personal communication, particularly to find out more about embedded and integrated support, because that's the information is more often available on sort of outward-facing platforms. And then we organized focus groups, student support staff, and teaching or academic lecturing staff. So I'll just sort of very briefly go over our sort of main findings. Nothing particularly surprising about our current provision. Certainly our hope was to discover that it really wasn't very good because we were arguing for change. But you can see it tends to be concentrated very much, not by when students need it, but when we have staff available, when staff all go on to pre-sessional, there's nothing for international students. This sort of confirms that our credit-bearing provision really had taken over from support provision. Where that credit-bearing provision was compulsory, part of the students' 120 credits, it was very well attended and well received, very positive. Students reporting the very positive impact of that on their other studies as well. But we'd also, sort of in an effort to innovate, had created a credit-bearing provision. So a long thin course, 10-credit course for the students in the School of Business over two semesters. And that showed a similar attrition rate to the sort of voluntary optional support. We've done by about half. The students who remained did experience the courses, useful, very positive feedback from them. But again, from teacher feedback, those tended to be the stronger students and not the ones necessarily that we wanted to reach. The one-size-fits-all model, yes, where there were negative comments in student feedback, it had to do with the fact that the content just wasn't, they couldn't see the relevance to their particular programs. Where there was some, usually through the teacher's ingenuity, ability to tailor it more to their disciplines, they were very appreciative of that. But they did seem to like the very mixed speaking classes, where they're interacting with people at very different levels and in different disciplines. So a sort of mixed bag there in terms of that that continuum. So yes, no major surprises there. We did find the analysis of provision elsewhere, the Balik accredited and Russell Group universities, quite interesting. I think somebody from the University of Birmingham has been doing, yes, it's yourself, a much more detailed questionnaire. So really interesting. We were looking at some of the same issues, but perhaps less exhaustively. So yes, we were looking at structures as well as provision. And we found, some interesting things. Sort of a mirror of the profession to itself here. A third provided credit-bearing options. From what we could see, again, there may be more that might be underreported because that's not necessarily going to go out on an outward-facing platform like the website. We found this interesting. A third of the universities offered support to both home students and international students. And we also, when we looked at the actual provision, the range of workshops, courses, and so on, it seemed to show a much richer mix or a much richer offering. Again, we're just looking at what's available, what's published on the websites, what the quality and actual experience of those workshops and courses, we don't know. We didn't really look at that. But we thought that was an interesting finding. Because we were secretly, maybe more openly, thinking of doing away with our generic provision, our generic skills-based courses, we were curious to see how far down this route other institutions had gone. And interestingly, I think most institutions do offer generic options, but they vary very considerably in how they were delivered. I think this very high number, University of Durham, probably because they're doing individual workshops as opposed to courses, but a very wide range of options. And still, most offering some sort of skills-based generic. We were interested in whether they were differentiated by level of study, undergraduate versus postgraduate versus UPGT, PGR, etc. And again, kind of a mixed bag. Some differentiating and others not. Those with fewer generic options seem to be going more down the ESOP embedded sort of route. So yes, this is what we were interested in. This was good to see this because, again, we felt it was going to support our argument with, a bid for change within the institution. Really, lots of the institutions offering some form of subject-specific, whether it's adjunct weak or adjunct strong, integrated, truly embedded. I don't know, that's the most difficult part to gauge. So about maybe about a quarter of them offering it sort of not by specific program but broadly by area, so arts, social sciences, that those sorts of options. And the others doing a kind of mixed bag. Yeah. So I won't say, because I'm kind of short on time, I won't say much about that, but some variation in the format of delivery, one-to-ones, workshops, courses. We had a one-size-fits-all, just courses. So the key message from that, everyone else is doing it better. Yes? I feel no shame in saying that, because I think it's true. Okay. So, moving now to our focus group participants. We offered a number of focus groups, so typically 4 or 5 in a group. Unfortunately, no undergraduates, but I guess, at least we had representation from all the colleges in terms of the student support staff, so we're talking about those involved in our effective learning advisors, those involved with academic support, as well as the library, Rio, and so on. Lecturing staff, that was nice. We had good representation, university lecturers, senior lecturers, professors, deans of learning and teaching were involved, and this was really important. So these are the questions that we asked. We were particularly interested in these two. Numbers 2 and 3. What's needed? What's the best way of delivering it? So I've just sort of lumped together the findings because there's quite a lot there and some interesting differences between the groups. But here's where I guess all three groups were broadly in agreement. It was more needed. Existing learning support needs to be better coordinated. Information needs to be presented in a coherent manner. Students did not appreciate being pinged from one service to another, nor did staff, academic staff, figuring out where to refer students. It was just experienced as very messy and difficult to navigate. And that has more to do with putting information out there. I think what emerged from these all three focus groups, there was a sufficient consensus of opinion saying that the needs of students, at least in the 4 colleges, arts, social sciences, science, medicine, are sufficiently different to have support that's tailored for each. And that was important to get that, because I think in recent years there has been a view, particularly among lecturing staff, well, English is just English. It's the same for everybody. It's a separate thing. It has nothing to do with disciplinary or academic literacy. There needs to be, the scheduling is really important. Again, we felt this was an argument for embedding and integrating support. It should be made available to all students, home and international. So a feeling, from all three groups, that this distinction needs to be removed. And also there was a recognition that there needs to be better integration of home and international students, possibly through support for third space activities. So really creating events, forums, clubs, whatever it takes to get students actually to be mixing. And this was quite fundamental. It was very strongly from the students, as well as from lecturing staff, less so from the support staff. So University of Glasgow lecturing staff also highlighted the need for these two things, and I think these are very interesting. Clear communication with staff and students about language and basically what's going on. Okay, so a willingness to reality test some of the fantasies that are around about what is doable. And this came out very strongly. Institutional commitment. So they were saying there is a need for institutional commitment to adapting practices. So that means all practices. So that all students and staff, including home students, have the skills to communicate in multicultural environments. So it was really good that this was coming from the staff and not us lecturing the staff and saying you need to change. So my feeling is the time is right for some kind of change to happen now, because the realization has come in this way. So pretty briefly, these were the recommendations that we made, and I'll explain them a little bit as we go. So we want to replace the existing generic courses. And we want to appoint for each college an academic English development advisor. So I think the word is advisor is important, because we want to be advising staff as well as students, both home and international, for each college, each of the four colleges. So we would probably, our proposal is to situate these people with the university's effective learning advisors. These are the people tasked with developing academic skills. But the reason we chose to do this is because they are allocated each to a college. So each effective learning advisor has a degree. So the engineering one has a degree in engineering, a PhD. He's also a qualified teacher. So we're mapping this EAP provision, if you like, to a structure that's already there and that's already differentiated by a college. So they'd be situated in the student learning service to work alongside the effective learning advisors, who each have connections, some embedded support themselves with particular programs. And I think the focus, delivering a mix of provision, but yes, a focus on integrated provision within courses and programs where possible. So working towards that embedded model. So I guess that's pretty much it. That's something about developing that third place activity. This is what we need, but really what we need is this. Spreading it out and integrating and getting everybody involved. So I've got some reference as well. It's there, so she is. But also some of the Australian documents that are really interesting, because they thought about it not just at the university level but at the super university level beyond that, and I think that's hopefully where the UK is going eventually.
Thank you very much. We've got 10 minutes of questions. I'm interested in your credit bearing, which is actually, and how are they different from the Union Sessional, and how are they different from them becoming the more specific subject?
At the moment, we offer two credit-bearing courses for undergraduate students. One of them is a somewhat catch-all. It's for students in the social sciences, and it's for international and exchange students, so European students. They do that credit-bearing module plus two others in whatever field within social sciences that they're interested in. And that's been going for some years. The carrier content, if you like, is social sciencey in content, if you like. But recently we developed another one for students going into MBLS, medicine, veterinary dentistry. And we have pretty strong collaborations with people in the medical school who are quite teaching and learning oriented. So it's been, I guess, it's still kind of adjunct model in the sense it's developed by us and delivered by us, but with their material and their assistance, if you like. And then the third one is the, we called it, perhaps mistakenly, Advanced English Business. The last talk advanced is not a good word to use. And this is a 10-credit course spread over two semesters. So timetable to try to avoid the busy times for students, so sort of in the middle of each semester, but there is no busy time. I don't think that particularly works. And that's specifically for students in business school, and it's about developing mainly their speaking skills, their ability to talk through issues, work together, this sort of thing. We ran it for the first time this year. As I said, the attendance was an issue with that. Students dropped out as other courses took priority because those who did it for extra credit. But those who stayed found it useful. And our thinking is that we may develop an undergraduate 20-credit course for each of the colleges and a postgraduate 10-credit course for each of the colleges. And we're in discussion with medicine to do that. I think particularly for PGRs, there's a desire for that. And I think that would be compulsory, actually a compulsory component. So in this model, we would retain the credit-bearing work, because in a way, being part of the school, the administration is set up to support that kind of thing. We're involved in the whole AMR, the annual monitoring review process, the course design process, to go through the same thing. So it's, that sort of work is better supported in our unit.
How is that different to the subject-specific assessment that you want to get grounded?
My
sounds almost the same.
Yeah, they're courses. And my thinking is that what I really like these subject-specific academic English development advisors to do is develop something much more flexible and responsive to needs. So probably workshops. I like the idea in Durham where students can basically thread together a series of workshops to create a bespoke program for themselves. They can drop in and out of them. I think what's difficult about the credit-bearing courses, it's another thing for students to worry about. You know, however useful it is, they still have to pass the assessments. It's still so it's working for students at the better end, if you like, or at least ones who have good time management skills. So I think the support provision needs to be much more flexible, and I'd also like to have some one-to-one provision in there. But in particular, I want those EAP advisors to work with staff, to develop embedded staff, to pass on those skills, to help them develop things to teach, that sort of thing. I have to watch this space because I don't know what they'll do, but I think the appointment of those people will be very important, and I think the selection and interview process needs to be quite rigorous because they're really going to have to multitask. Yeah.
Is there any kind of, within those colleges already, kind of study support people framework that isn't EAP focused? It's more a general literacy.
A little bit sometimes.
Patchy.
Very patchy. And again, we probably don't know about it. You know, just people do things and you think, oh. Within the College of Social Sciences, they appointed an international student learning advisor who we work very closely with. And effectively, the person, the AP advisor that we would advise would actually join her team because she's already in the college. She already knows the students' timetables, different lecturers, she's got relationships with them. So it's more a question of augmenting that bit. I think they were desperate. We were so slow in getting things off the ground. The college, in particular the business school, just hired their own, started to create their own unit within that. But we've very successfully joined up with them, and what she's done in the past is that they commissioned us to do things. But it'll be a much neater arrangement just to augment that team. Because the majority of international PGTs go into the College of Social Sciences, in particular the business school. So they need a whole team, not just one guy.
Time for one more question.
It's not really a question, because you're talking about the business school, and very much I love the years of partnership. We embedded with the business school fantastically. We got to the point where it was EAP and subject lecturer, co-teaching, working together on specific modules. It was so well done that they took the person from us and appointed them.
Mm-hmm. We're just giving up.
Yeah,
we're just giving up that person.
Yeah,
basically.
It was literally. Yeah. The business school now pays and owns that person.
Yeah.
Nothing more to do with
yes.
that.
That's basically what they did. And
it's
I'm very
good at sort of just.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I was a little bit nervous about this. Is this thing of, you know, shall we keep it all in the house? Because somehow you're staking out a territory. But you say, well, if that's a wilderness, what territory is that? You know. And also, I think by keeping all the work in the house, you're also implicitly keeping all the responsibility. And what the message we really want to say is it's not our responsibility. It's this whole community's responsibility. So by letting go of that, my feeling is that it's going to change. But again, I mean, I could come back to you in years and say it was all a disaster. We'll have to see. It's a new structure.
I need to finish, but I just said that maintaining the links. We've let lots of people go into our colleges,
yeah.
But in terms of quality assurance, we have both Bali and British Council
yeah.
accreditation. It's very important that what goes on
yes.
in another, so we still maintain very strong,
yes.
almost quality control of that.
I think that's important.
This big Bali Central, it has the advantage.
Yeah, it's
of
got to be
a discourse community
kind of
that needs
yeah.
when it is all in. I think this
yeah.
still needs to be.
It needs to have a hub. I think our proposal. We have good working relationships with the effective learning advisors already, but there will have to be a series of timetabled meetings jointly between us and them that happen at set times of the year. They're in everybody's diary, so it's not an optional. We must get together and talk about things. So I'm thinking at least quarterly, certainly at handover point from pre-sessional into in-sessional, but also at the end of semester one to see how that's all gone, plan ahead to semester two. So there will have to be put some kind of joint steering group in place, if you like, that keeps everything together. Because, again, there's a problem, you know, the potential problem of the credit-bearing courses and the support courses going in all sorts of funny ways. It all needs to be coordinated. So that finer detail is something that we're probably, once the model, I'm hopeful, will be accepted, we can then start to work out how that actually works, how to keep it joined up. Spread out and joined up.
Thank you very much, Mary. Let's stop there.